Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, December 17, 2020. Several people are killed in intercommunal violence in Warrap State.
The police did not intervene because local youth are well armed. Sometimes they overrun government posts.
And some patients suffering from epilepsy continue to face stigma in South Sudan.
When you diagnose an epilepsy in a family, it means you are putting the whole clans down. Nobody will associate with that particular family because they think it's a curse. And they think it runs in families and they think they could be inherited to their children.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Seven people were killed and several others injured during intercommunal clashes that have continued for 3 days in Thonj North County of Warrap State. As Daniel Mareng Wek reports from Juba, some soldiers from the South Sudan Defense Forces fell into an ambush on Wednesday near Warrap Town.
The chief of the Criminal Investigation Department for Thonj North County, 2nd Lieutenant Bona Bagakot, confirmed seven people were killed and eight others were wounded during a fighting between unidentified young men. Akot says the fighting occurred a few miles outside of Warrap Town. He says the police did not try to stop the violence.
The police did not intervene because local youth are well armed. Sometimes they overrun government posts. In this situation, the police are vulnerable.
Akot says the young men engaged in the fighting are well armed with 12.7mm assault guns, VK machine guns, rocket propelled grenades, and boxes of ammunition. Ayina Ginkwat is the paramount chief in Warrap Town. He says children and women were displaced during the 3 days of clutches.
Thonj North County experienced relative peace for the past few months, but anti-peace elements initiated another conflict. We are once again appealing for total disarmament in Thonj for our children to return home from hiding places and enjoy the dividend of peace.
Dr. Deda Kot, who heads the county health department, says two people wounded during the clutches have been admitted to the hospital, but the facility has no drugs to treat wounded patients.
We have received two people wounded, one at the leg and the other one at the abdomen joint. Their conditions are okay.
Earlier this month, two people, including a child, were killed in a series of clutches in Thonj South and Thonj East counties. Fall Mongongawak is a member of Thonj North County Security Committee, a panel established this year by the Warrap State Governor to monitor security in the area. Awak says more people were killed during clutches in the three counties of Thonj.
This continuous insecurity has caused dismay to our local people. Everyday issues of cattle riding and road ambushes, armed youth or criminals are terrorizing stability in the area. In this month alone, over 11 people were killed.
When contacted for comment, Deputy Spokesperson of South Sudan People's Defense Force, Santo Dumich, described the incident as regrettable.
It is regrettable for our civilians to continue killing themselves for empty reasons. The leadership of SSPDF and the local police are doing what they can to return calm in the area.
Armed young men are setting up roadblocks and forcing travelers to turn over their money and other personal belongings. In August this year, over 130 people were killed in Thonj East County after soldiers clashed with civilians during a disagreement in the market. For BOA News, Daniel Marengwek in Juba.
A health expert says patients suffering from epilepsy are being stigmatized in South Sudan. Dr. Atong Ayuel, the Director for Mental Health at the National Health Ministry, says most patients suffering from epilepsy are afraid to talk about their condition or seek medical care, believing they will be stigmatized. For VOA News, Ding Magod reports from Juba.
Epilepsy is a neurological disorder in which brain activity becomes abnormal and causes seizures or periods of unusual behavior, sensations, and sometimes loss of awareness. A 24-year-old Juba resident named Gloria says she was diagnosed with epilepsy in 2011 after a miscarriage. As soon as Gloria was discharged from the hospital, the seizures began. She says when she was more than halfway through her next pregnancy, her husband left her after neighbors convinced him that she would die.
The moment I was discharged from the hospital, I stayed for a while. After a period of short time, the sickness started so badly. It started when I started to cook and then immediately started to experience it. And then my husband was so afraid. And then he said that it will be difficult for him to keep me around because I might die at his home. When I was 5 months pregnant, he decided to send me back to my parents.
Dr. Atong Ayuel Longar, a clinical doctor in the Department of Mental Health at the Juba Teaching Hospital, says some South Sudanese associate epilepsy with witchcraft. Dr. Longar says oftentimes doctors find it hard to break the news to a patient who is diagnosed with epilepsy.
When you diagnose an epilepsy in a family, it means you are putting the whole clans down. Nobody will associate with that particular family because they think it's a curse and they think it runs in families and they think they could be inherited to their children.
Kur Ezekiel is the chief executive officer and the founder of the Initiative for Epilepsy Awareness, a local organization that works to create awareness and reduce social stigma on epilepsy. Ezekiel confirms that many communities stigmatize people with epilepsy.
People hide because they feel it is due to evil possession. It may be due to a psychological problem, or epilepsy sometimes is contagious. So relatives or family members tend to hide their relatives away so that the people don't know about their condition. And this is what is really affecting people with epilepsy. They have been given names. Others fear that their relatives who have epilepsy can never marry off.
Longar, an associate professor of psychiatry at the University of Juba, says to prevent stigma surrounding epilepsy, South Sudanese need to be educated about the disease. Longar says only when people see epilepsy like any other disease, one that can be treated, will patients come forward and get help.
An initiative of working in a community to change the perspective is one that we really support and really will stand behind it. So it could lead to an increase of clinical presentation, and by so doing we can serve them in a good number and we can serve a better population. So it's about changing the cultural belief. So when we diagnose them, we do a psychoeducation to tell them that it is an illness like malaria.
Ezekiel says his organization can improve the quality of life for epilepsy patients through advocacy, but Parliament should get involved too.
Laws should be legislated that protect people living with epilepsy to reduce the stigma. That's one of the major things we are looking at. And we are looking beyond where all conditions of epilepsy would be managed and controlled.
Dr. Stephen Raymond Jada works for AMREF Health Africa as a national research coordinator for epilepsy and Noddin syndrome. He says in most cases, the specific cause of epilepsy is unknown, but oftentimes it is caused by head injuries, brain damage, or accidents. Jada says epilepsy is not deadly, but complications associated with the disease can lead to death. Treatment of epilepsy includes taking medication. In some cases, surgery is performed to control seizures. Some people require lifelong treatment to control seizures, but for others, the seizures eventually go away. Some children with epilepsy may outgrow the condition with age. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
Sudanese health authorities say they expect to receive millions of doses of COVID-19 vaccine from unnamed European country within the first 3 months of 2021. The officials say the vaccine will only be given to frontline health workers, elderly people, public and private sector service providers such as banks and migration offices. Sudanese officials are still appealing to their citizens to continue observing World Health Organization guidelines. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Sudanese health ministry officials say they have secured 8 million doses of coronavirus vaccine for health workers, the elderly, and the people with underlying health problems. Speaking during a press conference on Tuesday, Dr. Amal Al-Fateh, the World Health Organization focal point person at Sudan Federal Ministry of Health, says the vaccine will be given to 20% of the country's population who are categorized as high risk free of charge.
The vaccination strategy will prioritize the most vulnerable groups and severe complications based on the results of the pathological sentimentation analysis. The first group will include all frontline workers, elderly, and those with underlying diseases who have been categorized as the most affected according to the latest pandemic health report.
Sudan has recorded more than 20,000 positive cases of the virus. Nearly 1,500 people have died from COVID-19, including 15 medical doctors. Al-Fateh says the vaccine will be shipped into the country between January and March of the year 2021. She says distribution will be based on demand.
The implementation of the vaccination process is preceded by the baseline planning process from the grassroots till the national level, which will involve all localities, stakeholders, and partners before the final approval. The distribution mechanism will depend on the pre-registration of the targeted groups, with the exception of health workers and the high-risk groups, which will all be vaccinated immediately.
Al-Fateh says her ministry is working closely with the WHO to secure personal protective equipment for citizens.
We will continue to work in collaboration with all international and external partners to strengthen efforts of the national response to fight COVID-19. We will continue to involve the World Health Organization, Global Alliance for Vaccination and Immunization, and UNICEF for the needed technical and financial support.
Al-Fateh says the Sudanese Ministry of Health will continue to learn from experience of regional and friends countries in their fight against the pandemic. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, health officials in Sudan say they have secured millions of doses of COVID-19 vaccine. Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what puts a smile on your face?
I have a group called Lishi. It's a group full of young children. So when I dance with them, it puts a smile on my face. Makes me happy.
What puts a smile on my face is good food and good people.
Okay, when I see good food and good friends around, well, I smile.
My husband, to me, puts a smile on my face. He cracks jokes. He likes cracking jokes, and that makes me happy.
One thing that puts a smile on my face is to see somebody who's been in trouble or who has had great challenges, and then he has broken through, his life is better, their lives have improved, their marriages, their business. It brings joy to my heart to see people becoming better.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Hunger relief organization Feeding America says more people are seeking help at food banks nationwide. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports.
Phyllis Marder quit her job as an Uber driver shortly after the coronavirus pandemic hit. Now she's struggling and says she's no longer embarrassed to go to food pantries to help her get by.
And then I decided that that was just like keeping a secret makes things get worse. So, and makes me feel worse about myself. And so I decided that it was more important to talk about it, like, you know, I have to pay my electric bill and I have to go to the food pantry.
There are many Americans like her. Feeding America, one of the largest anti-hunger organizations in the U.S., says the number of people seeking food assistance has increased an average of 60% since the pandemic began. Food banks and nonprofit groups are helping many survive. Brianna Dominguez, a mother of two, says she began going to pantries more often after her boyfriend lost his job. Her job will come to an end in about 2 weeks, and Dominguez hopes this Illinois food bank called Hillside Pantry will help them survive.
I'm pretty sure if I didn't have my job, I don't know what I would do. I don't know what I would do if I didn't have Hillside. It would be very hard.
New Orleans resident Norman Butler is unemployed and says he and family would go hungry without this food aid.
If it wasn't for the people being able to have you to come out to get some food to put on the table, we'd be worse off. No doubt, we would starve.
Butler says he isn't fortunate enough to be able to telework like so many Americans during the pandemic.
Because everybody can't work from home, and everybody doesn't have careers where they can just operate on a computer and still have their income coming in. Somebody like me, that's a limousine driver, shuttle bus driver, a bus boy.
And as he puts a block of cheese in his refrigerator,
this is what you call a blessing.
Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
This year's Global Competitiveness Report, the World Economic Forum measures the ability of countries to weather and recover from devastations caused by the coronavirus pandemic. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Because of the pandemic and the inability to collect necessary data, country rankings in the World Economic Forum's competitiveness report have been suspended. Instead, it examines the factors that help economies better able to manage and recover from the pandemic. The report notes the deep economic recession triggered by the infection continues to have profound economic and social consequences. While no country has emerged unscathed, some are more resilient than others. World Economic Forum Managing Director Sadia Zahidi says countries with advanced digital skills have been more successful at keeping their economies running during the pandemic.
Countries that have a greater level of digitization across their economies and that have been able to switch relatively rapidly to remote work, those happen to be the countries that fared slightly better, and in particular their populations, because of being able to maintain their jobs, fared slightly better.
The report cites the Netherlands, New Zealand, Switzerland, Estonia, and the United States as countries that have performed well on this measure. Authors of the report find countries with strong social safety nets and robust healthcare systems also have managed to withstand the worst effects of the pandemic. Zahidi says a number of international institutions advise governments to use stimulus packages to support their economies and workers during this difficult period. At the same time, she says governments should start moving to a slightly more dynamic phase in preparing for the post-pandemic period.
That doesn't mean that governments will not need to continue to do some investment, continue to provide some support. It may not be short-term furlough schemes, but it may instead be longer-term support for safety nets that allow workers to move out of their current roles, to get some income support, to be able to retrain, to reskill, and then move on to another future role.
Zahidi says recovery from the coronavirus for lower income or highly indebted countries will be more difficult than for the advanced economies. She says an international collaboration agreement is needed to support these countries in the short term so they can move forward. She adds they will need support from the international community for some time to recover from the ruinous impact upon their economies by COVID-19. The illness triggered by the coronavirus. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Facebook has shut down dozens of accounts and pages that it says were tied to France and Russia for spreading misinformation in African countries. Both France and Russia are vying for influence in Africa, with France military on the ground in Sahel and the Kremlin-linked Russia mercenaries accused of involvement in several countries. Facebook said French misinformation campaign targeted the Central African Republic and Mali to a lesser extent, Niger, Burkina Faso, Algeria, Cote d'Ivoire and Chad. It's the first time Facebook has accused French authorities of sowing misinformation. Facebook said the Russian operation mainly targeted Central African Republic, as well as Madagascar, Cameroon, Equatorial Guinea, Mozambique, South Africa, and the Central African diaspora in France. For more viewer, Jason Patinkin, reach out to Catherine Field in Paris.
So, first of all, can you explain, what did Facebook announce yesterday?
Facebook say they found what they described as a small-scale online disinformation campaign. They found three separate networks, one linked to French and two linked to Russian actors. Essentially, what it is this sort of geopolitical sparring on social media, a network of disinformation that was aimed particularly at people in the Central African Republic and Mali.
Now, Russian actors have been accused of sowing online disinformation for a long time now, but this is the first time that France has been accused. Who exactly in France was behind these accounts, according to Facebook?
According to Facebook, the allegation is that a group with links or associated with the French military were behind these networks. But this disinformation from the French side apparently started way back in May in 2018. It involved 84 Facebook accounts, 6 pages, 9 groups, and 14 Instagram accounts. And these accounts were all putting out what they described as fake news, or news that was vaguely fake or was very praising of the French role in the Sahel. These were posts that predominantly said how wonderful the French and the Malian armed forces were. It also was countering some of the posts on the Russian Facebook side. So there was always this back and forward. The French were sometimes said by the Russian trolls to be rapist thugs. The French Facebook groups were talking about Russian clandestine operations in Africa, very critical of Russian activities, particularly in the Central African Republic. One of the big things, though, about the French sites was they really didn't have that many followers. When you look at their pages in Mali, they had some 4,000 followers. Central African Republic, 34 followers. Compare that to the Russian sites where they had upwards of 200,000 followers.
Now, this comes at a time when France has troops on the ground in the Sahel region, and there's been some significant pushback with some large protests in Mali, for instance, against French military involvement in that country. But it also comes as French President Emmanuel Macron is really trying to portray France as a partner to African countries. He's pushed very hard to try to convince people that African countries want the French military to be in the Sahel, that they're there to help. But these allegations of France using misinformation seems to contradict that public approach by Macron.
I mean, these are going to be difficult questions for Emmanuel Macron to answer. It's going to be difficult questions for the military. Certainly, even though they might point to the fact that they only had 4,000 followers in Mali, the fact that somebody associated with the French military does raise questions. France does not have a clean, blank record when it comes to what it's done in French Africa, its zone of influence there over the last decades. It certainly will be interesting to see how it's received here in Paris and whether or not anyone else comes up with more information as to who is behind this.
That's journalist Catherine Fields in Paris. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Thursday. We would like to welcome our listeners on Voice of Hope Radio 98.6 FM in Wau Town to the family of VOA affiliate stations across South Sudan. We are glad residents of Wau Town are enjoying VOA programs. We now leave you with the song Damazin Baledna by a group from Blue Nile State in Sudan.
Sharina, Sharina.
We've been listening to a group from Blue Nile State in Sudan with the song Damazin Baledna. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your vehicles, homes, and phones. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you are in public places. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.